years, we have a few people potentially joining us. We'll admit them as they come up in the waiting room. So thank you everyone for coming and joining us for this lunchtime in the UK and Europe and morning in the US session. We're really, really super pleased to have Fadil joining us from the Pi today. I was connected with Fadil probably a few weeks back now and had a really great session, and so thought it would be great to maybe have some of her expertise come through to a more of a group discussion opportunity. So just to cover a few house kind of keeping bits before we go, I hand over. This is our first chat box session, so it is our pilot. So we've been working very hard to be as prepared technology-wise as possible, but please just bear with us if at any time we've got any pauses. I just want to do, I know we've got a lot of people with cameras off, but just very briefly, even if you want to keep them off later on, can I just get a quick thumbs up that everyone can hear me okay, and that the sound is coming through all right? Oh yeah, brilliant. Or a little emoji thumbs up, that's fantastic. Okay. Is it Eleonora, just if you miss anything, just give me a buzz in the chat box. We'll make sure that I can always try logging on separately again as well. Okay, brilliant. So we know that we spend a lot of time in the virtual world, even more so at the moment than we've done before. So we really want to create a kind of welcoming, warm, affirming, safe space to have and what could be at times some harder discussion points. We're always learning, and the point of this chat box session is to have someone who's going to share their kind of professional experience with us, but also for us to learn from each other as well. So whilst I think today is going to have quite a lot of Q&A as part of the session after Hadil's spoken to us, we do also want it to be a discussion as well, and then to be room for everyone to have the chance to speak and contribute if you want to and feel comfortable. So please put any questions you have in the chat box as we go. We've had a number of questions come through to us already as well, so we're going to try and cover all of them as much as we can. But please also use the chat box if you want to add an additional comment, or raise your hand if you think you'd like to contribute, or if you want some clarification on anything. So we're going to try and make sure that we are kind of getting everything from yourselves as well. And obviously this is going to be recorded, but we want people to feel that it is a confidential safe space as well. So we can leave stories and take lessons, but also steer clear maybe from name dropping any particular company or person in particular. And we are going to be taking some notes as we go, so that myself and Sarah from the league can kind of give us a little bit of a, not necessarily a top tips or top takeaways, we don't particularly like that title, but something that we can share with you as a bit of a one pager of the key things that have come out of today's session. So like I said, please pop any questions into the chat channel. Please raise your hand if you want to actually kind of verbally jump in on anything. And we do want to learn from you as well as just ideas. If you want to comment on something or share an experience, please do put that forward to us. And then we're going to get started now. So the first thing that we're going to do just before Hadil starts, is I'm going to share a poll, because I'd love to hear a little bit about where people have come from today and maybe their key reasons for doing this. Oh my gosh, we've hit our first technical issue. Sarah, maybe you can jump in and see. Mine's saying that I am logged in from another device.
I think that you're probably logged into your actual personal account as well. Hi, I'm Sarah Spencer, everybody, from the Global Leadership League and On Point Global Strategy. So thanks so much for joining us.
Sorry, I can't log out.
Okay. We could just go straight to Hadil, because that's,
let's go straight to Hadil. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Katie. So thanks everyone for joining. I think today is really just going to be about a general discussion. We've had a huge amount of questions come through, and it's, you know, I think it covers really everything that we think might be helpful for you to all sort of listen to. And I think after this, if there is an opportunity for us to have one-to-one discussion, that's definitely something I'm open to doing. So if you would like to have a chat afterwards, just get in touch with me. I think Katie will share my contact details as well. But just tell you a little bit about myself. So I'm Hadil. I'm a recruitment specialist with the Pi Exec Search, which is a specialist search service for professionals working in international education. It's a sister division of the Pi News. You probably recognize Pi News sort of covering all the news stories around the world in international education as well. So we really work and operate within the industry on a global level and across the industry as well. We do quite a lot of work behind the scenes as well. So hopefully these hints and tips will be helpful. In terms of what we'll be talking about today, I think it's really about, you know, career coaching in terms of finding new roles in international education, maybe having a look at CVs or resumes, there isn't a right or wrong way of actually having a CV or a resume look like, but it's sort of what I think might be useful, and also what hiring managers would want to know and how to find new roles. So sort of guidance on that as well. In terms of, the jobs board, that's something else we'll be talking about as well, you know, in terms of other ways of finding roles. So, Katie, do you want to sort of go through the questions first, or should we go through, would you like to sort of go through how we sort of find roles first?
Yes, please. I think that'd be a great starting point.
Okay, perfect. So firstly, I mean, the most important way to sort of keep a lookout on what jobs are available is obviously a jobs board. So ourselves, we have the Pi Jobs, which is a careers website for professionals, again, working in international education. You can always apply for a job online that you are interested in. But I think what a lot of people might not do is actually look really carefully at the actual job instructions. So for example, if somebody, you know, is looking for a role, you really need to be, you know, specific with what the requirements are and maybe highlight in your cover letter what is specified in the job requirements. I think it's, you know, quite surprising that a lot of people don't actually send cover letters with their resumes or their CV. So always make sure to look at the instructions for the job ad. And then also, I would follow up if there is a contact detail in the actual job ad. It's also worth sort of maybe connecting with that person on LinkedIn or just following up with a polite email just to say, hi, I've submitted an application. I am really, really interested. You know, would we be able to have an informal chat about my application? I think it's really important to, you know, bear in mind that there's a fine line between being proactive and then being sort of a little bit pushy with, you know, the follow-up. So do also, you know, allow the hiring manager to actually, you know, look at the application. So maybe give it a few days or a week after you've applied. But I would always sort of suggest doing that as well. In terms of cover letters, I think it's, again, there's not a right or wrong way of how to write a cover letter. But for myself, there is a sort of a foolproof way, sort of a guideline that I usually suggest to candidates applying for a role. So I would always start with a very short summary of my current job situation, you know, and what really attracted me to that job specifically. I would then follow that with a very short summary of my current role, the employer, the main responsibilities that I have, and then really talking about, you know, relevant work history to date, you know, that is reflective of my experience and what could be a transferable skill for that specific role, you know, so really details where it is appropriate for that specific role. And then I would follow up with, you know, experience with regions that you've worked in, for example, the US or the UK or Europe. And then I would also say, you know, what my experience is in terms of that specific function, job function, and then what my success has been. So what are my main achievements? You know, I think an employer always really wants to see what this person can bring to a table, and they want to see evidence of you doing your job really well. So if you can highlight any achievements in terms of stats or growth, or even if it's, you know, you've led a project that has then, you know, resulted in, you know, success within that business. I would then follow up with maybe, you know, at the end, it's always nice to see why you actually think you would be suitable for the role. And that actually might paint a really good picture for the employer to sort of get an idea of why you think you might be a good fit for the position. And then if you wanted to, you could actually highlight what your availability to start a new role is, because some employers will see, you know, somebody that's available to start immediately as a huge plus. You know, that could make the difference between your profile and somebody else's. So, you know, I think it's just really reading the job description carefully, trying to highlight your profile in the best way possible, and trying to also paint that picture to whoever's reading the application. So that's in terms of how to apply for a role. And then other ways you can also find roles is via headhunting services. So that's, for example, like the Pi exec search. So does this help? You know, I would say 100%, you know, it's always worth getting in touch with a headhunter or somebody who really is engaging and in close contact with hiring managers. They'll always be having conversations behind the scenes. They might facilitate conversations with you if there isn't an actual specific role. And they'll always, you know, be able to help you with the actual interview process, preparation, and, you know, really guide you through the whole process. So, you know, definitely get in touch with headhunting services as well. And then finally, yeah, sure.
I've got a couple of questions that I think might be quite well situated with what you've just been talking about that come in from before and one on the chat box. Can I throw them out to you now? So one which would be interesting, I think one person has mentioned about if they're new to the professional world and don't have a lot of experience, how should they be thinking of marketing themselves? And then in relation to that, we've got someone that has quite a substantial amount of experience, and they've asked about how they should then consider structuring or updating their resume. Do you have anything that you think, whilst I know we're only being very general, but any pointers that you think in relation to the documents that you were just talking about?
Yeah, sure. I think it's always you know, helpful to maybe highlight your skills and your experience, and that you're able to provide a snapshot of your actual skills and experience, any languages that you speak, the fact that you've maybe traveled abroad, that you're well traveled, that you, you know, have that cross-cultural communication side of things, that you're a quick learner. Also, if you are able to provide, you know, professional references or personal references of people actually saying, you know, this person has the potential to actually be successful in this role. I think that's really important. If you don't have the skill set, it's to try and paint a picture to the employer to show them that you are capable of taking on that role. And then if you do have a huge amount of experience and you don't know how to maybe, you know, highlight it for a specific role, you know, that's why a cover letter is there. And, you know, you want to look at the specific requirements and try to make it specific for that role. And, you know, so there's no harm in sort of tweaking your resume to make sure that you really highlight the skills that you're trying to, you know, show the hiring manager that you have.
Fantastic. And also, yeah, that's really helpful. And I think we've got a couple of people that obviously are conscious. I think this is having a bigger impact in the US at the moment about what happens if there are redundancies. So I've been having a couple of questions. One, which is how you can best keep yourself employable if you're out of work, but also, maybe you mentioned in the cover letters about talking about your availability. So if you've been made redundant, how might you state that employment situation within an application?
Sure. I mean, I think it's showing that you're innovative, that you can be agile, that you have the ability, for example, to work virtually, that you're able to maybe collaborate, you know, that you have maybe helped in, you know, in terms of short-term projects. You know, being proactive, I think, is really important, and being and using your own initiative as well is, you know, something that's really attractive. But also showing ambition, I think, just excitement, it comes a long, long way. And sometimes, you know, when we speak to hiring managers, they'll say, right, they both have the right skill set, they have the right experience, but actually this person is a lot more excited and has a little bit more ambition. And so, you know, that comes a long way as well. So in terms of, I think with regards to CV resume layout, that's something I can sort of go through as well if that's helpful. Should we get a thumbs up?
I'll give you an image thumbs up.
Brilliant. So in terms of CVs, resumes, again, there isn't a right or wrong way of how to write it. I think it's really different. You know, you have, you know, it's just a document really just to showcase what your work history to date is and what your skills and your experience is. Mm-hmm. So in terms of layout, I would say, you know, start off with your contact details. you know, make sure that you do have your relevant contact details on there. Make sure that you do have a telephone number on there as well. Also, a LinkedIn profile would be really helpful. I personally don't tend to suggest having a picture or a photograph of yourself on your CV or resume, but some people like to see a picture or a photo. So, you know, that could be a solution to that. Click on the LinkedIn profile and you'll see what I look like. And then you can then go into sort of a short summary of your experience. The short summary is something that is a very short snapshot of, you know, what your skill set is. What part of the industry have you been working in? Is it pathway providers? Is it languages? Is it higher education? You know, how many years? Is it a decade? Is it 5 or 6 years? And then also, you know, what does your network look like? You know, are you well networked within the agent landscape? You know, I think that's really important to maybe indicate as well. And then also maybe some information of if you travel or if you have any languages. And then maybe an indication of what type of role that you would be interested in, you know, the actual job function, you know, because you might be very sales focused, but you might actually have more of an interest to have a more of a student facing role. So, you know, just an indication of that might be helpful as well. And the reason why I suggest a short summary to begin with is that hiring managers are looking at lots and lots of CVs and resumes, and they just want to have a quick look and see whether or not you could be a good fit. So that could be an indication of your actual, that you are a good fit for the role. And it just sort of keeps them curious enough to then maybe go back to your CV or resume once they've, you know, done the first, you know, quick scan of their CVs or resumes. So that's why I sort of suggest to have that at the beginning. And then you've got the employment history. I would also, again, try to make sure that it is very relevant. Try to fill in any gaps. You know, if you were traveling for a year, you know, it's always worth putting that in there. You just don't want any question marks with the hiring manager. So relevant dates, you know, title, and then the actual company that you're working at, or institution. I would also put a link, hyperlink, to that institution or organization, because you don't want any misgoogling. You don't want somebody going online and finding, you know, something that you know. So if you just have a link there, that would be really helpful. And then 4 or 5 bullet points, just really concise, to show what your job function was. And something that I personally like to see is a key achievement section. So after each section of your, you know, what your job function is, it could be, you know, helpful to have a key achievements part, highlight it, and then instantly that hiring manager can really see what you've achieved in each role, followed by your education history. And then, you know, it could be that you have something like hobbies. You know, some people do like to add a hobbies section. You know, there's no harm in doing so. It actually could be a quite a pleasant sort of icebreaker, for example. You know, the hiring manager might also love sailing, and that could be something that you have a chat about when you start interviewing. And then references at the end, it could be that you underline the references, sort of outline the references, or you could just have a section that says references available upon request. There's no harm in doing that as well. It's just to show that they are available if they did need them. So that's in terms of CV or a resume.
Do, out of interest, what would you say when people are looking at a job description, how much of that do you think excuse me, they should be able to actually feel confident doing? Because I have heard before people say, I can't do, and I've done it myself, I can't do all of this, so it's probably not worth me applying. Is there any sort of guide maybe that might help people feel confident in applying for a position? I know it's a tricky one. Yeah. Just out of interest.
Well, no, that's fine. I mean, you can't always tick every single box. Sometimes you could, you know, you can, you won't tick every single requirement box or experience box, but you might be a really good cultural fit, and that can make up for that. And you can also show, for example, that you are a quick learner, or that you've, you know, show an example of in your previous role that you didn't have that skill set, but you were able to pick it up. And actually, you could probably do that for this role as well. But usually job descriptions will show really clearly what the desired requirements are and what the key requirements are. So it's always worth, again, reading the job description really carefully, and just trying to paint a picture to that hiring manager of why you think you would be a good fit. So just using transferable skill sets. If you don't have the skill set, do I have a transferable skill set?
And thinking about, I know you've mentioned LinkedIn a couple of times, but we did get a question coming through asking about how to get additional information that's maybe not listed on the selection criteria when you're applying for a university position. I know in the UK, I often see there is often someone you can connect to, sometimes in HR, sometimes within the department, but I wonder if you've got any other thoughts on how they could go about that.
Is your question how they can connect with...
Yeah, they've said how can they get additional information that's maybe not listed on the selection criteria?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's what an informal chat is really helpful for, and sometimes job ads will have contact details for the hiring manager. You know, if you'd like an informal chat, please get in touch with this person. Definitely get in touch with them and have that chat. And even if you don't have a contact detail, sometimes it's quite easy to find out who the hiring manager is. You know, if the role says reports to director of admissions, you know, maybe try and connect to the director of admissions and see if you can have an informal chat. I don't think I can hear you, Katie. It's on mute.
Oh, I just said thank you. That's great.
No problem. So I think that's in terms of, you know, guidance with, you know, CV, resume, jobs board, things like that. So I'm happy to go through the questions in the discussion section.
Yeah, brilliant. So I guess if we jump straight in, I know I've shared some of these with you already, but we have had a lot come through from people asking about transferable skills, especially this idea of how they may transition, whether that's within their university, within education, maybe into a new department or a different role, or potentially even moving to thinking about how you might move more greatly within education or even out of the industry. So I'm just wondering, we've had some people asking what skills sets you think may be most essential as we move forward, how to start to market transferable skills, and maybe even how to think about what your transferable skills actually are. How might people be able to start to assess that for themselves, I guess?
So in terms of how to identify, so what's the question there? Sorry, I didn't...
No, that's okay. What skills do you think you're seeing might be most essential as we move forward
time.
For people to have?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good question. I think, you know, one of the main skill sets I would say is innovation. I hear the word innovation quite a bit at the moment. So I think if you show that you're innovative, that you are dynamic, that you're agile as well, that you are able to adapt to, you know, the way things are changing. The fact that you can maybe work virtually as well, that you're able to perhaps collaborate, that you are patient, you know, that at the moment we need to be a little bit patient with things that are going on, but then also showing that you are quite proactive and that you are using your initiative. I think those are really key skill sets at the moment.
And if anyone's maybe sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, how do I identify what some of my key skill sets are or what might be transferable, is there any tips you might have on how they can maybe start to assess what they've done so far and the jobs that they're looking for?
It's always worth maybe having a chat with you know, previous employers. You know, it's recommendations, references, things like that. Maybe sit, you know, speak to your ex-line manager, for example, or somebody that you worked with, and maybe ask them to, you know, tell you what they think that that your skill set could be, or what your key achievements are. Sometimes it's difficult to assess yourself, but it's, you know, it could be helpful to demonstrate or indicate what your future potential could be. And also knowledge is power. I think it's, you know, making sure that you're up to date with industry trends, news, you know, it's always worth, you know, speaking to somebody and knowing that they are in touch with what's going on at the moment. So sort of just be present and, you know, make sure that you're up to date with industry trends, I think is helpful.
Well, that maybe leads us a little bit into one of the other sections we had. We've had a few people asking questions which relate through to looking towards the future, what changes we're going to see. So asking really if you're seeing yet or expecting to see any changes in hiring trends coming from the kind of impact of COVID-19.
We've already seen actually some changes, and I think it's just the you know, versatility of you know, the way that we work. I think also a lot of employers are a lot more open to remote working, flexible working. A lot of the jobs that we're seeing at the moment are, you know, they're happy for you to work from anywhere really. So I think in the future it's probably going to be that you know, the ability to work from anywhere really And the fact that, you know, if somebody has traveled as well and is well traveled and has maybe worked in international education, again, that cross-cultural communication piece is really, really important. You know, it shows that you are able to engage with different audiences quite well.
Definitely. And I think, I mean, I know when we spoke the other day, you also mentioned that you're beginning some feedback from people that are recruiting at the moment. And I just wondered, is it looking like there's a lot of recruitment happening at the moment? Is it in the middle of people managing to fill the roles that they're recruiting for? I know a lot of people might be thinking, should I stay or should I go? Is it the right time to be looking for a new job?
I think it's more about, it's definitely a time to have conversations. You know, this is the time to be having chats. You know, a lot of our clients might not necessarily be hiring right now, but they, you know, they are still happy to, you know, engage with, you know, potential candidates that might be interested in joining their organization in the future. So it's a really good time to network at the moment. I think a lot of, you know, the start dates might have been pushed back a little bit. You know, it is an uncertain time for everyone, but it's, you know, it's always worth to connect and network with potential employers.
And I guess on the back of that, are you seeing any slightly different jobs emerging within the industry? Again, we might be a little earlier, people maybe need some time to reassess what roles look like, but have you been seeing anything slightly different coming through to what you've seen maybe before?
If I'm honest, it's not a huge difference. You know, I think it's just that, you know, recruitment is a little bit slower. I think it's at the moment people are trying to, you know, just move through the situation, work through it, and then, you know, see what happens at the end. But I think it, you know, a lot of ed tech, for example, techie roles, you know, if you have that technical or sort of the, you know, the ability to sort of work, you know, collaboratively, you know, I think I can see a lot of collaborations happening. I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned networking before. We had an interesting question from someone come through saying, do you have any tips for networking more easily than just cold calling? And I know you've also mentioned LinkedIn, so I'm probably going to go back to that again.
I think it can be quite daunting to try and network. I think, you know, it's something that people are a little bit worried that, you know, they might not want to sort of contact somebody and then, you know, not have a response back. But it's always worth just, you know, sending a polite message, even if it's through, you know, LinkedIn, just saying sort of, you know, I'd love to connect with you and just hear your thoughts on, you know, where you've been working. I'm really interested in getting in this part of the sector. I'd love to learn more. You know, you'd be very surprised how helpful people are in the industry. You know, there's a lot of, you know, sharing of thoughts and ideas. So it's definitely worth, you know, connecting with people on LinkedIn that you might, you know, in terms of the industry that you're interested in, you know, getting into, but also speaking to friends or colleagues who might actually be able to introduce you to, you know, someone specific in the field that they might know. That might be, you know, less daunting, you know, if you actually get an introduction from a colleague. It's also very, you know, helpful to maybe, you know, join webinars like you're doing now, because then you can sort of go back and say, right, I was in the same webinar. I sort of, you know, noticed that you were there as well. Love to connect, love to have an informal chat as well. So I think, you know, it's just finding different ways of how to do it, but you'll be surprised, you know, people are happy to engage and talk.
We had a fantastic session the other week on kind of do's and don'ts for LinkedIn, and one of their top tips was to be making sure that you're actually, when you're connecting with someone, you are writing that message, you are personalizing it, you are saying how you know them or why you've seen them and why you want to connect, so it isn't just a blank kind of, will you connect with me, LinkedIn.
Yeah, I think it's sort of just saying, I hope you don't mind the direct approach, or just saying why you would like to connect. Also just, you know, if you are job hunting, it's also worth telling people that you are job hunting, because you'll be surprised as well that, you know, people talk and people are able to introduce you, and, you know, using other forms of social media, not just LinkedIn, you know, for example, Twitter, or, you know, even Facebook, you know, all these things, you know, try and use different types of social media.
I think that's a really good point as well, to actually let people know what you are looking, or what you're looking for right now. We had a slightly different question that I think is still kind of related though, around any advice for someone trying to get back into the industry after maybe being out of it for a little while. I know we've touched lightly on this already, but anything specific that they might want to consider?
So again, I think it's just making sure that you are up to speed with what's going on in the industry. Just because you haven't been in the industry doesn't mean that you don't know what's going on. Maybe networking again, that's really key. Re-engaging with old networks, old colleagues that you used to work with. So if you are interested in getting back into the industry, it's worth just highlighting that you do have those networks and you have the current knowledge and that you are able to get up to speed. I think that's the main thing.
Fantastic. And maybe a slightly more tricky question to answer, but someone said if they're applying for jobs maybe in a slightly new area for them but within education and they're not getting much response, how long should they keep trying at it before maybe looking for a new tack?
I think that's a little bit of a tricky one. I think it's, it's tricky. There's different reasons why you might not be getting responses. It is very competitive. I think looking for a job can be a full-time job. I think it's just key to keep pushing, keep going. Don't get put off by not getting responses. It's just, follow up, do what you can. And, that's all you can do. It might be worth trying to actually connect with the hiring manager. I think that's really important. Just trying to get that informal chat organized, because once you have a chat with somebody, they might be able to sort of feed back to you and say, this is the reason why you're maybe not getting a response from us. Or if you are interested in getting in a specific field, it could be that you speak to somebody who is actually working in that role and say, how did you get the role? What could I be doing differently?
Thank you. That's really, really helpful. I'm just wondering if anyone, the chat box has been a little quiet, so if there's any other questions people want to put forward from what Nadil has been saying so far, please go ahead and type them in now. So if you want to just pop your hand up, we can come to you as well. Okay, well, that's actually all of the questions that we had in advance for you, Nadil. Because we've answered some of them already, and I'm glad that people are finding it really good advice. And I know it's people might have kind of individual experiences that they're going through that maybe they want to connect with Hadil on individually as well at another time. But I would be interested though, if people are open for it, we could do a quick maybe 5-minute breakout session. We've got.
Yeah, I just wanted to add actually, Katie, one of the questions that had come in that I thought was really interesting was how to keep ourselves employable, just in case we are in this, you're not really getting the interviews at the moment just because, hiring isn't, for the specific role that you're looking for, trying to maybe, get involved with short-term projects could be an option, but also trying to sign up to free online courses. There's lots and lots of really useful online courses that are available, so definitely worth searching and trying to get on relevant ones to sort of make yourself, to ensure that you are employable as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and I've also seen you might have seen it, and maybe other people across the industry, there is a number of different education, especially kind of charity education organizations that are looking for people to volunteer in different ways, whether that's from an academic or a professional point of view, and lots of organizations similar to us with the League looking to host different webinar sessions. So I think there's lots of different organizations that you can maybe do some extra voluntary work for, to kind of keep something on your resume or CV at the moment. Just to jump in, we've had a couple of questions come through. This one's a really good one, Hadil. What is the best way to respond to someone who tells you that you are overqualified for a position?
I think it's just to say, great, thanks for the feedback. Please keep me in mind for anything that might come up that might be a good fit for my skill set. Or is there something that is available or, within your, group or, with a colleague, for example, in the team, it might be worth just sort of pointing that out, that you are really interested in the actual organization. If there's something available, please let me know. But also, if you feel that they're saying that you're overqualified, but you feel that you could, that you're happy to maybe take a step back for that role, you could communicate that to them as well, that you understand that you're overqualified, but actually you're interested in the potential of the role, and you could actually, really make an impact, and that's, you're fine with that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really good to know, because I know from having been in a hiring position before myself, sometimes you do look at applications and you go, this person is very, very qualified. Will they be the right fit for maybe the team alongside the role, but also how long is the interest here with us? So sometimes it's trying to get a little bit of an understanding and insight into, okay, what might be some of the background that's going on with this applicant. Not necessarily that you need to share your whole life story behind it, but it can be useful sometimes in making a decision, I think, to understand, especially if you've got a very qualified application coming through. So this one we touched on a little bit already, but slightly different angles. So we've had, what might be some new roles that come out of our current situation, and how might student recruitment change? I don't know if that's anything you've seen much about on your side, Hadil.
So what type of new roles are coming up?
Yeah, and how might student recruitment be changing?
I mean, student recruitment might be changing in the fact that you might not need to necessarily travel to actually go and meet with the agents or meet with the students. It could just be that it's more of a virtual meetup that you have. So recruitment might be a bit more virtual. You know, that might be the way it's changing.
Mm-hmm. I'd definitely say we've been seeing that already, as well as we're looking towards summer students and fall students and how programs are going to run. Whether they're remote or on location in a country anyway. This relates through to kind of a little bit what I asked you earlier. But it says Sheryl Sandberg in Lean In talked about women applying for a job only if they were 100% qualified, and men if they were 60% qualified. Any advice if you don't meet 100% of the qualifications of the job?
So the question is, what do you do if you're not 100% qualified for the role?
Yeah.
I think no one's 100% qualified for the role. It's more, it's just showing your potential to be successful in that role. you might not necessarily tick all the boxes, but you might tick enough boxes.
Yeah, definitely, I would agree. And I think it's always really, I find as if I'm ever an applicant, really useful when we start to see that essential and desirable.
Yeah.
As a good way of kind of helping people to see what they 100% maybe like, maybe not 100%, maybe like, need, what actually is just a really great benefit for the role. This one's come through. What fields within international education do you expect to see most opportunities within post-COVID?
So what, where in the industry would...
Yeah.
Again, you know, it's really difficult to predict. I wish I knew. But again, it's just, you know, we can see that the ed tech world is obviously, you know, booming, you know, the techie side of things, you know, just, but then again, you don't need to be a tech genius to be able to work within that industry. You know, the fact that you have been working, for example, at an institution or within, you know, a pathway provider or an English language, you know, the fact that you've been working with international students and you have that understanding of what the international education landscape looks like is actually very useful to, for example, an ed tech company. You know, you have the networks, you have the knowledge, and that's a transferable skill that you can offer to that sort of company. But then it's also showing as well that you are able to work virtually, that you are quite good at using technology and utilizing technology to be successful in your role.
Yeah, definitely. There's been some great links coming through, so thank you. We'll make sure that if people don't access them, we send them out afterwards as part of our resources. But on to another question. This is really interesting, actually. Obviously, sometimes it can be difficult to ascertain through a recruitment process the culture of a team before you join an organisation. Yeah. Do you have any suggestions on the types of questions that people might want to be asking, either during an informal chat or during the interview, to try and kind of gauge a little bit more beyond what's on paper?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's always worth finding out, you know, is this a new role? Is this a replacement role? If it's a replacement role, you know, what's happened to that person? How long were they in the role for? You know, in terms of, you know, if it's a new position, why is it a new position? Why is it now available? In terms of, you know, culture, you know, you could say sort of what, you could just ask, you know, what's the company culture like? What's it like to work within this organization? And also, when you speak to the hiring manager, you will sort of get a feel of what type of organisation they are as well. But that's also why it's useful to speak to a recruitment, you know, some headhunting service, because we're able to gauge that. You know, we can actually speak to you and say, right, cultural fit, you know, you'd be a really good cultural fit. I can see you really working well with the hiring manager.
Mm-hmm. We've had before, when I've been interviewing, some questions come through that I've always thought a really nice way of trying to gauge some of the culture around, like, why do you enjoy working here? Why do you enjoy being part of this team? Mm-hmm. What do you enjoy most about your role or this team in general? And I think for me and my colleagues, that's always a really, really nice way to try and showcase a bit more from our side what we think the culture is of our organisation, because it is so important that it works both ways, so for you joining and for the people hiring, that you feel, yes, this is going to make a real difference in the team that we've got already. Mm-hmm. So I just had a bit of a long one come through. So unfortunately someone's had to go part-time and they've been looking for a little while for new roles, had a couple of interviews but no job offers, had a resume professionally done, networked and volunteered, and have applied for jobs that are similar but not specifically international education, at a bit of a crossroads and not really knowing what else they can do at this point. So I'm really sorry to hear that, because that sounds like it's been such a tough situation. Yeah. But anything that you think, anything next that they could maybe try there, Adil?
It could, you know, I'd be happy to have a chat with you. Let's speak. But also maybe having a look at, again, online courses, for example, you know, that could be something that you could, you know, add to your skill set. It might be worth, I don't know if you've spoken to ex-colleagues, ex-employers, if they're able to help you as well in terms of, you know, their network, can they introduce you to someone? But let's have a chat. It could be that, you know, maybe we can give you some guidance.
And I think this is a really good time for people joining these groups as well to start to connect maybe with people more broadly across the industry who may not be in the same country as you or in the same time zone, but again might be able to provide another contact link. So I'm more than happy. I've just realised I've got the Global Leadership League under my name here today because I'm not in my own account, but also if you want to look me up on LinkedIn, Katie Lander, I'm more than happy to connect with people as well on that platform to try and open up different connections for everyone as well, because I know it's tough and it is quite unknown still. We're seeing things moving week to week across the globe, but it's not going to be easy, I think, for organisations to make a concrete decision on what they're doing at this point in time. Oh yes, I will share my LinkedIn link for sure. I will pop that up by the end of the session, but we'll also put it through any resources that we send out as well. I'm happy for it to be there too. Alrighty, I'll give people a couple of minutes in case anyone wants to jump in with anything else. But if not, something that we have been talking about before, which people may or may not want to add a comment in the chat box or put their hand up and shout, talk about, is how people are getting on at the moment. How are you feeling? Obviously, it's an unusual time, and so is there anything that you're feeling maybe particularly excited about in what this new world might look like potentially in recruitment? Or is there anything that you're feeling trepidation towards, maybe a little bit of unsurety? I know that we're not too big a group, but people may or may not want to share. But if anyone does, please feel free to pop in how you're feeling about, you know, job searching at the moment.
Yes, I just took myself up mute. I'm trying to figure out how to raise hand. I think for the US market, so many of the study abroad companies have been impacted for redundancies. So I think one hard thing that I've heard, one tough part is just to see when the market will actually return and how it returns. You know, so people are now looking at probably next year, 2021 is the earliest. Amy, I appreciate your comment you popped in about short-term study abroad just being impacted just in general. Right now, there are no planes flying, there are no visas, there are, you know, travel advisories. So I think that that's probably a hard place to navigate. We're going to be doing a chat box in early June called Should I Stay or Should I Go? We're going to quote the Clash. That will really be like, you know, do I try to work this as kind of wave it out, or do I start to really pivot into a new sector or to a new area? So I think that not on the trepidation, but I think that that's one of the tough spots that I've been hearing a lot.
Yeah, and if I can respond to that, actually, I just heard that J1 has been indefinitely cancelled, and I think that's the story we're looking at. But it is definitely very, very challenging right now. But I do want to mention a lot of internship companies are trying to pivot to virtual internships, but it's really worth pointing out that for the graduates of this year, next year, for the next few years, graduates are going to be graduating into a very uncertain economy. And I think it's really important that people still think about how they can provide opportunities for these students to do things be outside of their academic experience, which may be virtual. But I think that's the big opportunity for the study abroad providers and the internship providers to try and create a meaningful opportunity which doesn't involve getting on a plane. And I think we're going to see a lot of innovation around that. And I think for people who are potentially losing their job, but they want to keep their same skill sets and use them, that's going to be the opportunity that I see around trying to make meaningful international experiences which are desk-based.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that as the universities, at least in the US, I'm not sure where everybody else is, but as they start to look at their virtual world and how they're going to deliver, even I've heard that California State University system is basically going all online for the fall, half a million students. So that also gets us into the virtual space instead of waiting to the, we're going to return to the way it was, you know, on February 1. So, yeah, so I think there's some wonderful opportunities, and the question is, how does it move along and at what pace? So thank you.
No, definitely. And I think something that I've seen popping up a lot now is also the kind of online virtual professional development industry sector is growing as well. Coursera has got so much recruitment going on at the moment from what I've seen. And there's so many things. Companies coming out offering new platforms for professional training as well. So I think that's a really good place to be considering potentially as well. If you're maybe a bit more like me, working more standardly within the careers section, that might be a potential transition.
Yeah, definitely. And also service providers, you know, to the industry. I've seen quite a few jobs in, you know, insurance, for example, that provides insurance to international students. You know, that's something that I've seen quite a few roles in there. Or you know, if you've got the networks within education and you're able to, you know, engage or help a service provider, that's definitely a useful skill to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Jill, and for Sarah and Amy for your comments as well. Because we're 20 past one, getting towards the end of the session, I know everyone's going to either be potentially starting work or heading back from lunch. So I just want to share a couple of pieces as we wrap up very quickly with you. So just give me 2 seconds, I'm going to share my screen very, very briefly. So we do have a couple of upcoming programs and events for members. Sarah's already mentioned a couple of these already, but the next one upcoming next week is Resilience is Your Superpower, Grab It, Ground It, Use It. So I think that's going to be a really good one, kind of starting to get a little bit more maybe in the wellness, how is everyone doing right now, and how to stay strong within the current environment. We do have mentoring circles starting again in July, so please do register by the 15th of June if that's something you're interested in. I did my first mentoring circle, that was the first kind of interaction I had with the league, and I met 4 absolutely amazing ladies, and we really supported each other as we grew and shaped kind of the next 6 to 9 months of our careers, and it was really, really helpful and beneficial. So if you've not done one before, I would recommend checking out the different topic areas to see what you might be interested in. And then we do have towards the end of May the virtual leader, so managing in our new world, and then one which is more for the virtual professionals, so how to fire up the energy in an online meeting. Two really really quite different but exciting discussion webinar chats that we're going to have going on. So please keep an eye out for the mailouts that come out. Do pass these on to your colleagues and friends, because I know some people may not be accessing their work emails in the same manner at the moment. And please do remember and pass on, the membership is reduced 50% off through to next April at the moment, to try and help support everyone at this current time, as you know it is very, very tricky. And then finally, a very, very big thank you to Hadil for joining us today. I really appreciate you being willing to give up your time and to share your knowledge and expertise with us all. And so I've popped Hadil's contact details on here for everybody. But again, we can make sure that that's shared out with the groups of resources. I'll leave that up very briefly for a moment, but I'll be here for a few more minutes if anyone wants to pop anything else in the chat box. But for now, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for joining, everyone.
Thank you everyone for joining us.